You know, I tell my students all the time that if one person feels less alone because, you know, because of something you wrote, it was a success. You know, like, and I write to be published and I write to connect with people. I want to have those conversations that there's such a thrill every time somebody reads something I've written and we can talk about it. But it's really about connecting. It's really about showing people that you're not alone in this, you know, that we're in it together. And that's huge. That's really important.
Hey, midlifers, welcome to the Midlife Makeover Show. Are you ready to break free from your mundane midlife? Are you feeling trapped in a vicious cycle of rinse and repeat days? No matter if you're experiencing a divorce hangover, job burnout, or you just have the midlife blues, I got you. Hey, I'm Wendy, your hostess of the Midlife Mostess. I too was hit by midlife like a freight train. I too felt stuck in the same dull chapter. I wanted the clarity of how to create a new life beyond divorce and the courage to leave an unfulfilling career. But I kept telling myself that I wasn't worthy and it was just easier to stay in my comfort zone until I found a little secret, the freedom to live my life my way. In this podcast, you will learn how to achieve a vibrant midlife mind and body, how to create solid relationships through love and loss, and how to create an awesome second half of life. Grab your grande latte, pop in your earbuds, and let's get this midlife party started. Welcome to a world where midlife is just the beginning. This is Wendy Valentine, host of the Midlife Makeover Show, inviting you to explore my Amazon store, a curated collection of all the things I adore. From inspiring books that fuel my soul to nutritional supplements that make menopause the breeze, each item in my store is handpicked to add a touch of joy and ease to your midlife journey. Looking for that perfect skincare product to keep you glowing? Or my best love hair products for bouncy, luscious locks? Dive into my favorites and discover what makes my heart sing. Visit my Amazon store today and treat yourself to a little piece of my world. Because in midlife, it's not just about making over your life, it's about adoring every moment of it. Head over to amazon.wendyvalentine.com to embrace the best years of your life with style, grace, and a touch of fun. Hello, and welcome to the Midlife Makeover Show, where we explore the pathways to renewing your life, no matter what stage you're at. I'm your host, Wendy Valentine, and today we're diving into a thrilling topic of how to create successful change in your life. I can tell you it's possible. Whether it's a career shift, a new hobby, or a complete lifestyle overhaul, we've got insights that will empower you to jump confidently into your next big adventure. Joining us today is a very special guest, Lynn Golodner. Did I say your name right?
You did. Good job.
Okay, good. I forgot to ask you that. Lynn is an accomplished author of 9 books. You guys, I'm just trying to get one book out the door. And countless articles and essays. She's not only a skilled writing coach, but also a dynamic marketing entrepreneur and the host of the Make Meaning podcast. Love the name. Lynn leads writers' retreats across the globe, helping individuals find their voice and tell their stories. Residing in Detroit with her husband, Dan, and a rotating roster of their 4 young adult children. That's hysterical. Lynn's literary talent continues to shine. Her first novel, Women of Valor. Did I say that right?
Woman of Valor. Woman
of Valor. Yes. of courage, right? Debuted in 2023, and she's eagerly, as we all are, anticipating the release of her second novel, Cave of Secrets, later this year. Lynn, it's an absolute pleasure to have you here on the show today. Welcome, welcome, welcome.
Oh, I'm so excited to be here, Wendy. Thank you so much for having me.
Yes. Oh my gosh. Okay. So if you're watching on YouTube, you can see this gorgeous room that she's in. I just absolutely, it's so romantic and it's so creative. And it's got like these adorable chandeliers. They look so dreamy and all in like this, like, I don't know what that color blue is on the wall. It's like a
peacock blue, you know? Yes. Peacock blue. Yeah. And if you notice the beautiful framed tapestry behind me, I got in India 10 years ago. It was handmade. It's beautiful. You can't see it from here, but there's like such gorgeous cloth and fabric. It cost $50 to buy and like $600 to frame. It was crazy. Yeah. But yeah, it's like, and the whole room is like designed around that beautiful piece of
handmade
art.
The framing business? You know what I mean? I'm like, hello. Oh my God. And there's books galore and velvet couch and velvet chair. It is a writer's dream. And I'm just going to take a spin off of that whole thing. It's like, it's so fun. And here it is. I'm looking in the other side of the picture and I've got the RV. It's not as, I think it's glamorous in its own way, right? Like, I mean, it's still glamorous. It's glamorous.
I think I want to trade. Like you come, you can inhabit my writer space and I am motoring around the country in your RV. Like I want to be Wendy right now. That's true.
One of these days we'll just be able to, I'm going to leap over into that side of the screen and you come over here, you know? But
sure.
You know, yeah, that works. What I find fascinating about this whole thing, as I'm in it right now, but it's not even just like you're designing your room, I'm designing my RV, you're designing your life, you're designing you. I think it's just like, and I think like once you can grasp that in your life, that you actually have that control, if you will, and that creativity within you to go, you know what? I want to paint the walls. I want to buy an RV. I want to go travel the world. I want to start a business or I want to write a book or it's so possible.
Yeah.
If you just give yourself that permission. So take us back a little bit. I want to hear some more of your backstory. How did you become a writer?
So I think I've always been one. My mom will say that I was six when I started writing like full stories and poems and stuff. So we're going to go with that. And I remember, and actually behind my desk, I have this little on a shelf, a little corduroy covered journal from the 70s that I used to carry around when I was like 9 or 10. And I keep it there to remind me who I've always been. Like that's how I figure things out. It's how I process, how I know what I believe. I have to write it, you know? And it's just what I loved. And it's funny because when I went to college at the University of Michigan, I don't know why, but I thought you had to be in business, law, or medicine. And here I'm writing all these little stories and I'm working for the Michigan Daily. I was freelancing for the Ann Arbor News. I was doing so many writing things. And I'm like, wait, there are people who get paid to do this. Like, why can't I do that? And so it was just this revelation one day, like I can be a writer for a living. So, that changed my world. It just did. But again, it took me until my 40s to realize that I could creatively write for my career. You know, like I used writing as a journalist. I lived in New York and in Washington and came back to Detroit. And I wrote for newspapers and magazines all over the place and very well, you know, winning awards, making a lot of money, and then started a marketing company, tons of writing in that. But I wanted to write books. And so like my first 8 books were always on the side, like labors of love. They were not things that I ever expected to make money from or, you know, it was just like, oh, I have a book, woo, you know? And about 5 years ago, I was like, you know what, if I call myself a writer, why is it relegated to the sidelines?
Right.
And so I shifted everything. I shrank my business. I fired some clients. I've always taught writing. So I have an MFA, which allows me to teach at the university level. And so I ramped back up my teaching so I could just surround myself with everything writing. And I said, I'm writing books. I want to write a book a year for the rest of my life. And I'm writing fiction and I'm getting fiction out there, which is a whole different ballgame.
Yeah. And, that's so cool.
Yeah. And it just, I was like, I can do this and I want to do this. And it was just amazing. It was like I was stepping into the person I've always wanted to be, but it took me a few decades to get there, really.
Yeah, and it's just part of how you evolved. Like, I feel like, I don't know about you, but I feel like if I didn't have that crappy corporate job that I couldn't stand, I wouldn't appreciate so much of being able to create, write what I want to write, say what I want to say, right? Like, almost like you wouldn't know light if you didn't know dark. You wouldn't know joy if you didn't know sadness, right? It's like the dichotomy of life, right?
Yeah.
So what type of writing do you enjoy the most? Are you digging the fiction?
Well, I love writing fiction, but it takes like total immersion. And so like I just started writing my third novel about 2 weeks ago and I had spent about a month or so planning it out and I'm like deep into it and I just get lost in the time, like hours fade and I'm like, you know, so far into it really quickly because it just, I get really into the characters and the places and whatever and the words, but I also write creative nonfiction essays. So I still am pretty into that. And I do have fun with that, but that's so different because that's about real life. It's about my experiences, and it often takes a lot of time to really get perspective and figure out what am I writing about? You know, like, right. like I went to California in January on a book tour, and my youngest son was with me, and he's very outdoorsy, and we did some incredible hikes, and I summited a mountain for the first time because I get like 2/3 of the way up and then I freeze and I'm like, oh my gosh, it's so high, I can't go any higher. And he's 17 and he wants to be a wilderness guide for his career, and he like is That's so cool. Yeah, he's so cool. He's so good at just guiding me. And I made it to the top and I'm like, oh my God, I summited a mountain. And so it was like, there's something I need to write about this, and I had so many wow. details and whatever, but I don't yet know the story. Whereas with a novel, I do know the story and I just can't wait to see how it unfolds. So those tend to marinate while novels just go, you know.
Love the side note here. I just love that you're encouraging him to follow that as just yeah. like, you know, back then it was like, okay, your choices are an accountant, an attorney, an engineer, you know, like right. now. And, you know, that being said, I feel like there's so many more opportunities nowadays than there was like even 20 years ago, especially yeah. for artists, writers. I can remember reading in Wayne Dyer's book, one of my fave authors, and he talked about, I mean, think about that back then, whereas, you know, like you're having to like haul books around in the trunk of your car. You didn't mm-hmm. have the luxury of what you and I are doing right now. They didn't yeah. have the luxury of social media and going, hey, like I just put a thing out last week. Like, I've got a book coming out. I got a book deal. You know, like there wasn't that. And so now it's like you're able, which goes to say that you can really share your story.
Yeah. Yeah.
On such yeah. a larger level. And for some people that could be kind of scary. Like, I mean, even for me, when I started this podcast, I was like, holy crap. Like mm-hmm. I'm putting my voice out all over the world. And then, as, yeah. you know, I look at the stats. I'm like, oh my God, there's people in Germany and Portugal and Italy listening to me. I'm like, why?
So cool.
But yeah, but then there's the impact.
Yeah.
There's the impact that you can have, whether it's, you know, like in the words and the space between your words, like you really can make such an impact in this world nowadays.
You know, I tell my students all the time that if one person feels less alone because, you know, because of something you wrote, it was a success. I know. You know, like, and I write to be published and I write to connect with people. I want to have those conversations that there's such a thrill every time somebody reads something I've written and yeah. we can talk about it. But it's really about connecting. It's really about showing people that you're not alone in this, you know, that we're in it together. And that's huge. That's really important.
I feel that everyone has a story within them to tell.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And true. do you find that with some of the authors that you coach and that you teach and mm-hmm. That you help to publish, yeah. do you find that some of them don't want to publish? They just want to write the story and they just want it out of their system?
There are some in some of my writing programs who don't mm-hmm. necessarily want to publish. They just want to work on their craft. But I'll say they come in saying that. And in time, as they're nurtured, as they're part of the writers community that I've created, they start to get brave. And they realize mm-hmm. that, like, you know, maybe one day they will. Maybe one day they will publish and yep. it won't be so scary. You know, it could actually be really uplifting and encouraging.
Yeah. Yeah. So interesting fact about me. Years ago, I wrote a story once. Actually it was like 200 pages. I wrote it in 10 days, where I was telling you earlier.
Oh my God.
About,
like, yeah.
When I get in the zone, I'm like, I'm in the zone. I'm like, I am not eating for 10 days. But, and at the end of it, I mean, it literally got this book got to the point where it was about to go to print.
Uh-huh.
And I stopped it. And the reason is, and I'm an open book, but I wrote the book after my brother came out of a coma. And mm-hmm. he had suffered from addiction, and
wow.
my whole family had suffered from addiction. And so the book was, it was a prescriptive memoir, if you will. It was less about me, and it was yeah. less about even my brother per se. It uh-huh. was more about the book. The purpose behind it was to help people that were dealing with addicts in their life.
Okay.
Because
okay.
I kind of felt like, and I would go to Barnes and Noble. I'm like, where are the books for me? Like, I'm yeah. not the one yeah. with the addiction, but right. how am I supposed to deal with these people? I mean, there was the classic Codependent No More, but I'm like, what else is there? I'm like, I need yeah. a book to put out there. Long yeah. story short, I decided not to publish it because I myself didn't want to have to go into that business.
Yeah.
Teaching people and dealing with, I just wanted to write the book.
Yeah.
And I wrote the yeah. book. So it ended up becoming like a 200-page journal entry. But, and who knows, maybe someday yeah. I'll write it. And since then, my brother did pass away after his second coma.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah. So that would be an update to the book. But, and that's something I'd have to like gear up for to do.
Like you'd have to relive it.
Is, yeah. The point yeah. of it is just like getting it out of my system, mm-hmm. not out, but like almost like embodying it. And really, it was so healing for me.
Sure. Yeah.
So whether you publish or not publish, it didn't matter. Like just getting that story out.
I have a friend who's really big in journaling. She's in her late 70s, Merle Saferstein. She's amazing. Mm. She has a couple of books out about journaling, actually. And she has, I want to say, more than 400 journals that she's been diligently writing, and she keeps them in a safe. And it's just how she processes life. And then she takes meaning from it and sometimes might go back to it or leave a legacy in some way. But it's about, it's really a very nurturing thing to yeah. have a journal, and just for you, just mm-hmm. for you to process your experiences and figure out what you think about it all, you know, and
Do you journal? Do you journal?
I do not. although I have journals all over the place, including this little one. Now I'm into little ones that I can like put in my hand, you know, as opposed to big ones. And I'll take them. They're in my purse, or like I go on a hike and it's in my pocket, because you never know when something you want to just remember a detail or like, you know, a thought. I also talk into my phone, like talk to text, you know, and, yeah. And that will find its way into essays or sometimes even into a character in a novel. You never know. So yeah. I don't journal on the regular. I wish I did. I think it would help my writing. It might be a form of meditation for me, you know, mm-hmm. but I am erratic with it for sure.
Funny fact about me. I've got all sorts of funny things, but, so yeah, next time you're in an airport, you might pick up my journal. So when I complete a journal, I leave them in airports.
That's cool. I love that.
And, I mean, I don't mention names or anything. I don't like add my people like, I'm not putting my social security number in there, guys, you know, like, but right? I've been doing it for years, and I always thought like whenever I would leave the journal, I would leave a uh-huh. note in the very front for whoever finds it. And I let them know uh-huh. you can read it, you can trash it, you can give it away. I don't really care. Uh-huh. And my hope is always that the reader, like whatever I was going through during that time in my life, that would actually help them. Maybe there's something in there that they can connect to, like, oh my God, I just broke up with someone, or, oh my God, so-and-so died. Yes, I can relate to this, what she's feeling, you know?
Uh-huh.
And I never filter. Like my journaling technique is I basically get up, I make a cup of coffee, I go straight to the journal before my brain has a chance to wake up and is trying to like filter things. Right. And yeah. I just jump onto the page, one page, close it, and I never reread it, and boom, it's done.
Wow. But
same thing though, like very, very healing.
Yeah. Getting all the gunk out.
Yes. You know? Sometimes the best healing is when you're really pissed and you're just like, you know, you're like, but, writing is such a powerful, I feel like sadly because of social media and digital and all of this now, and now the AI, like there's the art of writing is not being appreciated.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny. I've been calling it an art in some of my writing programs. And I offer a program called the Writers Community, which is a commitment. It's either 6 months or a year to join it. And it's a small intimate cohort. And you really work on your writing. And I've been talking about it as an art, and I got a little pushback from a few writers, and I'm like, no, but it is. And I think, I feel like, especially women, we don't take ourselves seriously, especially if we're doing creative endeavors, because they've been belittled by society, you know, and so many women come to me at midlife in my writing classes and programs and say, I always wanted to write, but, and then what follows is like, somebody told me it was a nice little hobby. Somebody said I couldn't make any money at it. Somebody said I had to do something more lucrative, whatever it was, like, to not take it seriously. It's other voices in their heads. And so I'm basically teaching them out of those mindsets into confidence, into belief in their voice, and that their voice matters. So it's a long way to go to get to writing as an art. It's just, it's just, you know, to get to a point of, this is worth my time. I'm not being frivolous. And then we can move on to looking at it as art. It's a lot of undoing that has to happen before we can get into that.
Yep. It's like the Statue of David, right?
I know.
Yeah, like when they asked Michelangelo, how did you carve the Statue of David? And he's like, oh, that's easy. I just, you know, looked at the marble and carved away everything that was not the Statue of David, everything that was not the angel in the marble, right?
Yeah.
And so I feel like with writing, you do start to carve away without you maybe even knowing you're doing that.
Yeah.
You're chipping away at those limiting beliefs and the blocks and I can't write, I can't do this. And I mean, you know what, too? There's so many different styles of writing nowadays that there's a reader for every writer.
Oh, 100%. There is. And this is another thing I teach all the time is that it is so subjective. So when somebody rejects your writing, it just wasn't a fit for them. Maybe they already accepted an author like you or the topic that you're writing about or whatever, or they don't believe in their ability to sell it or whatever it is. And, you know, you go into any bookstore, you go into any library, pull a random book off the shelf. It may or may not be good in your eyes, but somebody else will like it. And so I think that's why it's really important to understand that you have to write in your own voice about the topics you're passionate about, not what you think will sell, not what will satisfy someone else, but what you need to write. I think that is just so important. You have to trust yourself to be daring and to take risks. You know, my book that's coming out in August, Cave of Secrets, I was reading the final version and my husband is one of my early readers. And I had this day of like an attack of self-doubt. And I'm like, who's going to read this? Everyone's going to think this is terrible. And he's like, what are you talking about? And I mean, I have already 9 books out and this is what I was feeling. And I have people who've read it and said, oh my God, this is so much better than your last novel, which I loved. And I'm like, really? And still I was plagued by self-doubt. And so I think we have to remember how subjective art is and writing is an art and that it's for some people and it's not for others and that's okay.
How do you break through the self-doubt?
You just keep writing and you surround yourself with people who are going to lift you up. So I talk about this all the time. There has to be a writing community around you and that could be a few writing friends that you meet with regularly and share work and give feedback. Or you go to like a Zoom program where you can write in community with people. Or, you know, like you have, like I have a few different writing communities and I see them regularly, or I can always reach out and say, oh my gosh, today I'm feeling terrible about my writing and someone will talk me off the ledge. And so you like going to writers retreats, joining organizations like the Women's Fiction Writers Association is phenomenal. Since I joined it, it changed how I look at, like, I guess before that, maybe I knew people who were more competitive. Every single person I met through WFWA is encouraging, supportive, your biggest cheerleader, even as they're putting their books out. Yeah. And it's a lesson in community and collaboration. You know, like there's such a celebration when one of our members has a book come out and it doesn't, none of us ever feel, well, if she has a book out, then I can't, or she's going to threaten my sales. Like nobody feels that way. And it's like really uplifting and just, there's enough for everybody.
Yeah, I think there like could be even like this misperception with writers, like you're just kind of all alone, writing your little
book. Well, that's true. Well, that is true.
There's a part of it that's true, but then there's this amazing community about it and the connection. Yeah. And kind of going back to what I was saying before, the impact that you can make on your words. Like, and I feel like thinking back of all the books that I've read in my lifetime, sometimes the simplest books were the most profound to me.
Yeah. Yes. So yeah, there's a book. Mm-hmm. There's a book I love by Kate Chopin. It was from the beginning of the 20th century called The Awakening. Very slim little book. Not at all in today's style, but, and it's simple, but it was profound. Like it really struck me, and I keep it on my list of, on my shelf of favorites, because I just feel like she did it and she didn't have any fluff and it was really nice. You know? Yeah.
I mean, I keep that in mind too, with my writing, that I don't have to try to reinvent the wheel. I don't have to try to come up with something fancy. And if anything, sometimes I feel like the reader just wants some, just give it to me straight. The dog ate the cat. Like,
right. You don't need 17 adjectives. You can definitely be good with one, maybe two, you know?
And yeah. And I can remember I went to a writer's retreat in Santa Fe one time and there were the writers there that would stand up and read their little piece with all these beautiful descriptions with adjectives. Then like the orange flower that was blowing in the Santa Fe winds. And I was like, shit. I was like, I cannot. I was like, and then that self-doubt would creep in. I'm like, I suck. I cannot write. And then my belief was that that is how you're supposed to write. So there really, I don't feel there's a right way or wrong way. You find your way and then you fine tune it. Like the more that you write.
And you have there's an audience for everyone. I mean, I know people who write a lot of books and they're rather formulaic and they have a huge audience because people know what to expect. They love it. You know, I think it's daring to write and it's even more daring to put your writing in the world. And the best thing is when somebody discovers it and says, this story, I needed this story. It came for me. Mm-hmm. And it made me understand something better, understand myself. And I think it's just so profound, the impact of writing.
I know. Have you ever gotten a bad review?
Two. And they're both stupid, to be honest. One was for, and I'm just talking about Woman of Valor because there may have been bad reviews on earlier books. I don't know. But one of them was, this book has too much food. Like, it's true. There's a lot of food in this book. It is part of,
maybe you're
part of
how I write.
It's just a part of the story, you know? And so I actually thought about doing a supplement with all the recipes, but there were so many dishes that it was overwhelming to me to gather the recipes, although I'm going to put it out later this year. But so yeah, there's a lot of food. I don't think that's a bad review. I think that's, you know, that didn't fit for that reader. But I think it says something about the reader's personality that she went to such great lengths to post a review about that. Like, what's bothering you, honey? Like, let's talk about that. You know, like I had a big heart for her. So, and the other bad review said this book was boring. I'm like, ouch. But again, not for that reader. But why? Like, I have a policy of I don't write bad reviews. I just don't write a review if a book is not pleasing to me. Yeah, because I don't think it's helpful and I think it can hurt someone and I don't want to do that, you know? So
did either one of those hurt you? Did they hurt at all?
No, I was just annoyed that it like lowered my overall rating on Goodreads and Amazon. I'm like, dude, you know, now I'm 4.3 instead of 5.0 of out of 5 stars and like, let's get back up to 5, you know? So that was it. I was just like, really, you're being very petty, you know?
Yeah. So. Yeah. Yeah. And I think you just have to really guard yourself on that stuff and not take it personal. It's hard, but that's also a practice, right? I mean, I got bad reviews on the podcast when it first came out. I was like, oh my God, it's so stupid. I just turned this whole thing off. You know, I was like, you know what? Like, I was actually jealous. Like, even on social media, I still get like tons of bad crap on there. And I'm actually so jealous that these people have time. I'm like, how do you have time?
Yes.
And I'm actually, I'm flattered because that means that I'm on your mind. I must have triggered something with you. You know
what I mean? Yes. Like,
but you have to just become so detached and that you have to make your voice, your heart, your soul, number one.
No matter if you just got served with divorce papers, got fired from your job, or ran out of gas in the pouring rain, bad days are bound to happen. They happen to all of us. The key is to not let bad days turn into bad weeks, bad months, and a bad chapter in life. Too many crappy days can lead to depression, anxiety, lack of sleep, poor behaviors, and one big funky funk. That's why I created the 8 Happiness Hacks, a free download to help you overcome a bad day quickly and get you back to rocking your midlife. Please go to wendyvalentine.com/happiness to receive your free download and start applying these simple yet effective methods to bring happy days your way.
I will say, you know, one of my favorite authors is Diana Gabaldon, who wrote the Outlander books. And I love those books. I think they're beautifully written. Of course, then there's the Outlander series that everybody goes crazy over. I mean, I'd say she's successful. I don't know if you agree, but like, I think she's done a really great job. There are bad reviews for her. And I remember it was the coach Tara Moore, M-O-H-R, who really turned me into this, because what she said was in one of her courses, she said, look up your favorite author on Amazon and read a bad review about that author. So that's your favorite author. See what they have to say. And it usually says more about the reviewer than it does about the author or about the work, which is true in the two examples I just gave you. And so I did. I looked up Diana Gabaldon, who has like, you know, hundreds or thousands of reviews. And there was a bad review that said something about how like Outlander, all the books have so much rape in them. And you know what they do? It's actually a fact. It's just, and maybe that wasn't something somebody wanted to read about. Okay, that's fine.
Yep.
But it wasn't like, oh, she's a hack, you know, she's not talented or whatever. It was like, it was that they had an issue with the subject matter. Fair. But it doesn't say anything about her or the books, the quality, you know, like, and I think that's really important that when you hear critical feedback, most of the time it has to do with the person giving the feedback and not with you or your work. There are times that it can be. So like in my writing workshop, you know, every month I meet with, you know, 7 other women here in Michigan, and we've become really close friends, and we all share we share our writing and get feedback. And there are times that they give me some straight feedback, like this needs improvement. And I trust them because they usually have a point. And that's why I'm in that group, because I respect them and their insights. And so that, and I brought the work so that I could make it better with their feedback. Yeah. So that's different. But I think when it's some rando out there who's like, you know, oh, it's boring. It's like, I would say something that I can't say on the air right now, but I would say, you know.
Oh, you're on the Midlife Makeover Show. You can say whatever you want. We embrace all voices. Yeah.
I would say, you know, fuck you. It's boring. Like, go read another book. Why do you have to post a review? Like, come on, you know?
Yeah. And then I would comment and be like, yeah, word to that. Fuck you. Wendy says fuck you too. So.
Right. Like, you're not my reader. So please don't read another book of mine. I don't want to hear from you again, you know?
You know, this reminds me of, so yesterday I interviewed someone and we were talking about relationships, right? Yeah. And how other people are a mirror, right?
Yep. Oh, so yes.
Kind of like that. A book can be a mirror for someone. Yes. And it can be very triggering. And who knows what they were going through during that time in their life when they're reading the book. And they were needing something like, oh, I need something so exciting to distract me from my boring life.
Yeah.
So I'm going to say that she's boring. You know, I mean, it's just, it's, but you, I think you have to own who you are. You own your voice. You put it out there. Who gives a crap? Like, I feel like yesterday I was like reading my bio. I mean, I do, I have to read like the bios. I can't memorize everybody's bios, you know? And actually that was one of my, the critics that was out there put a bad review. She's like, she just reads it. I'm like, what do you want me to do? I'm like, hey,
are you supposed to like do voices?
I'm like, shit, I barely know my own bio by heart, you know? But I forgot the point I was going to make. Oh, but yeah. So like as I was like reading the bio, I like kept trip. I've been doing so many interviews like lately. So I'm just like talking nonstop.
Yeah.
And I've been like tripping over my tongue as I'm like reading the bio. The old Wendy, the old perfectionist, people-pleasing Wendy would have probably have not, honestly, no joke, would have been stressing about it for the rest of the day, probably wouldn't have slept, would have needed a therapy session, no shit. And now I'm like, whatever. Like, I don't, like, I feel like putting your soul out into the world and your heart and your words, that's more important than anything. And going back to, it's the impact. Like, the heck with the haters. Like, yep. Think of the impact you can have and, like, the stories that everyone has. That was one thing I realized the other day. I was talking to someone here in the RV park, and they were telling me their story, their childhood story, and how they came and, like, where they're at now. And here they're 60-something years old. I'm like, wow, everyone has such a beautiful story.
Yeah.
No matter what it is, you don't have to have anything crazy. You could have had this perfect, amazing childhood. Yay for you. That's a story.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. I travel a lot, and the past few years I've done like a month long writing sabbatical in a different place. And I love being there and just like becoming a local for a time, getting to know people, just asking like open-ended questions. And maybe it's the journalist in me, or, you know, I don't know, but I love to hear what makes people tick. Like, I'm so fascinated, and people are usually willing to chat, you know. It's interesting. I was on a plane recently overseas, and there was a woman sitting in the row with me. We were in the bulkhead, and there was nobody in the middle seat. So I had an aisle, she had an aisle, and she had an 18-month-old baby with her, and she was traveling alone. And she was pretty young. And so, you know, but this baby was like squiggly all over the place. And I'm like, oh my God, it's going to be such a long flight. And as we started to take off, she looks at me, she goes, and we hadn't really met. She's like, can you just talk to me? I'm really nervous about takeoff. And I'm like, oh, aww. Is it your first time flying? And she's like, no, I feel this way every time. I'm like, great, let's talk. And we just started chatting, and like, and it was like, and then of course we had 12 hours on the flight together, and it was so awesome to just like chit chat and make faces at the baby. And like, you know, it was just amazing. I felt like, and then it was funny when we landed and we were going to Israel, and we landed, and I got all teary when I landed, which every time I go there, I feel that way. And she looks at me and she goes, I know. And it was like, it was just like this bonding moment. I don't even know her name. I don't know where she lives. I'll never see her again. And I loved learning about her on the plane. It was so cool.
The connection. And we all connect. I mean, it was part of the reason for starting this podcast, right? And I'm sure for even yours too, it's connecting.
Yeah.
People and stories and experiences in life. And I learned, like when I interview people, like it's my own little mini workshop just for me. I like it, and y'all get to benefit. But I love learning so much about everyone's life. Like, oh my God, it's amazing. Like, how did you do that? Like, so speaking of Women of Valor, tell me more about that book.
So it's a book about a young woman who chooses to become Orthodox in Judaism, and she lives in Chicago. She loves her life, which was deliberate. There's so many books about people hating religion and leaving religion. And I felt like I didn't need to add to that. You know, there's enough out there. I wanted her to make a choice that is not expected and to really love it. And then some things happen to challenge that. And so one thing is that one of her sons is abused at his school, and she and her husband respond differently to how they want to resolve it and deal with it. And then and that causes a rift in their marriage. And right around that time, her ex-boyfriend shows up online and is like, I never should have broken up with you. And so he sort of provides like an outlet when she has some distance from her husband. And so what's she going to do? You know, is she going to stay? Is she going to go? Like, and it's all about that. And so it was really fun to write. And it was, it took a while. I started writing it in 2011, wrote 60 pages, and I really didn't like the main character. She was very whiny. She didn't like her life. And I put it all aside, and I was like, you know, and I went about raising my kids and working in my marketing company. And then 10 years later, when I started to really shift my life around, I went back to it and said, well, there might be something here, but it's going to need to change. And I don't want her to be a whiny person. There's enough books with main characters who are complaining, you know? So I wrote it. And it's funny now that, so I have a second book coming out that has nothing to do with Women of Valor. And this third novel that I'm writing now is a second book in what is going to be the Women of Valor series. And it's funny because, so it came out last September, and I love talking about it. And I've always said, I never get sick of these characters or talking about them. But now that I have a new book coming out and a third one that I'm working on, I sort of am a little sick of those characters because I'm into new characters, and it's interesting. And also I think my writing has gotten better. Like, my readers for Cave of Secrets, when they read it, they did say, this is so much better than Woman of Valor. And I loved Woman of Valor. And I'm like, well, that's cool. So who knows what this one is like? Maybe it's like really great. I don't know.
So what's Cave of Secrets about?
So Cave of Secrets is about There's four main characters, but it takes place in Scotland and in Michigan. And there's a young woman from Michigan who goes to Scotland on an archival fellowship to become an archivist. And she falls in love with a guy there. And while she's hiking near Loch Lomond, she ducks into a cave in a thunderstorm and discovers a journal buried in the ground that is like really curious to her. So she's going into archival research and she tries to figure out who wrote this and, you know, what is the significance? And of course it leads back to this guy she met and like his family, her family, all these things. So there's lots, it's a lot of secrets. It's a lot about identity and being brave enough to be open about who you are. So all of my books have some element of Jewish identity in them. So whereas Woman of Valor is a very like religious book, Cave of Secrets is not, but Jewish identity still factors into things. There's also identity, like sexual identity. So there's a character who is gay, but is like afraid to be out because his community will cast him out. And so it's him being brave enough to say, this is who I am and live openly. And the journal ties into all of that too. So, yeah.
It's interesting. It seems like a lot of your characters from what I've been here so far, it's they find that courage within them to do something outside of their norm.
Yep. Yeah, it's true. Yeah. I think there's a lot of figuring out who you want to be and who you are and how you find your place in a community also in my books. And so it's, I hope I'm writing strong female characters. I mean, I am one, I sort of live that world, but I also had fun writing the male characters in Cave of Secrets because of the four main characters, two are female, two are male. And I think it's really a fun challenge to write in a character that you're not. Like, I'm not a gay man. I never will be. So yeah, like, yeah, it was cool to write that.
To tap into that. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's what's cool about fiction is that you're just making shit up.
Yeah.
It's your own dream, your own story, your own like whatever. I'm like, you could sit and observe, you know, people and be like, I'm going to create a story out of that, you know?
Yeah. Oh, for sure. So, but I will say, everybody asks, is Woman of Valor autobiographical? And it's not, but there are things I pulled from my life for it because I did spend 10 years in the Orthodox Jewish world. But then people will ask, like, first of all, one of my daughters, she's like, oh, every book you write is about our family. I'm like, it's really not. Like, it's just really not, you know, but she believes she can see things from our family or our relatives in the different characters. And who knows, maybe my characters are influenced by what I know, you know. Cave of Secrets was inspired by historical people that I actually did research on and real places. And so there's a lot of research that at least go into my books, but I think a lot of novelists are like that. And the same thing with this new book that I'm writing, which is about Sally's the main character in Woman of Valor. This is about her best friend, Batya, and her whole story. And I did a ton of research. And so I decided to make her husband a descendant of one of the first Jewish people who ever came to America. So I was doing all this research about like, this was like pre-revolution and everything. And I never knew any of this. And so I'm like, well, that's kind of fun, you know? So,
than the bad reviews, have you gotten a really good review that was like, it really changed someone's life or that they like really like, oh, you know, this inspired me to blank?
Yes. I have had a lot of people with those types of reviews. Thankfully, there's a lot of good reviews. So that's really heartening. But, you know, I had somebody who is sort of an acquaintance who was an early reader of Woman of Valor. And there's obviously this issue of adultery in the book. And I didn't know much about this person's personal life. And they came to me and they're like, oh my gosh, it really triggered me and poured out this whole story about how they had been emotionally unfaithful in their marriage. Not, you know, they didn't have an actual adulterous affair, but emotionally. And their partner has not forgiven them. And so they had like an issue with how Sally's husband deals with infidelity in the book. And I was like, and it was just fascinating because it was like a therapy session and I'm not a therapist, but this person was like, sort of pouring out their heart. Like, you know, I wish that my partner had been this forgiving. I wish that, you know, it had gone differently. And like, it was really interesting. So I think people do see themselves in our books, is what you said earlier. You know,
it's a mirror. I mean, books change lives. I I had discovered my love for writing when I went to pastry school in Paris, France, and Le Cordon Bleu. And at the time,
I was like, I'm sorry, Wendy, you've just had the coolest life. Like, I think I need an hour with you. Like, I need to hear everything. That's amazing. Okay. Like, I went to culinary school in Paris. Like, la, la.
Yeah. I was like, I'm leaving the kids. I'm out of here. I got to go to school. But amazing. Yeah, I had this dream of becoming a French pastry chef. And I was like, wow, what the hell, you know?
Who doesn't?
Yeah, I know, right? Like, I gotta go. but I remember, like, I had this little going away party and all my friends were like, well, how are we gonna know how you're doing? And, like, social media wasn't, like, I mean, Instagram wasn't around. It wasn't that long ago. Crazy. 10 years, okay. 11 years ago.
Yeah.
And so I was like, well, and someone had said, well, why don't you start a blog? And then we can just read how you're doing in school. And I was like, okay, yeah, cool, I'll do that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you know what was interesting though, and I have to keep this in mind even as I move forward with writing my book, is that I was just writing to write. It would be like me right now just sitting here telling you the story. I'm just writing out the story. That's it. Like, sure. I'm not trying to overthink it, right?
Yeah.
And without fail, I wrote every single day. No one told me I had to. I was just like, I didn't want to tell about my day, right? And I knew that the next day would come and I'd forget about the previous day. So I would go and I would go to school and I'd be kind of like watching things throughout the day, things that I would want to write about, right? Which is kind of interesting. You kind of pick out these little things throughout the day, you know?
Yeah.
And then on the way home, I'd walk home from school back to my little apartment. I'd grab a little baguette, bottle of wine, and some chocolate. And then I'd write there, you know, at night before I go to bed. So cool thing is, so I went a couple of times, two different sessions that I had to go to. And then the second time when I went back, I'm in the locker room, in the sweaty locker room in the basement, and I'm like getting my uniform on. I've got my bag of knives, you know, my chef knives and stuff. And this girl from, I think she was from Germany, and she's like, excuse me. And she's like yelling at me from across the locker room. And she said, are you Go Wendy Go? That was my handle name on, I can't think of the blog thing, but anyway, she said, are you Go Wendy Go? I'm like, yeah, that's me. And she said, oh my gosh. She's like in her cute little German voice that I'm not very good at doing. And she said, I want to thank you so much for your blog. She said, you're the reason I decided to become a French pastry chef. I was like,
no. Really?
And I had no idea. Like, I actually, like, within 4 weeks, I went from zero readers to 100,000 readers.
Oh, my God. Oh,
but
wow.
I wasn't writing anything super crazy and creative. I was just like, I walked to school today, and I saw the people putting the veggies out on the, you know, like, it was just nothing spectacular.
Sure.
And people were like drawn to it because they were wanting to imagine themselves on that everyday journey with me.
Well, that's what a great writer does, is they bring you in with their words and you feel like you're there with them and you're like on a trip. You're escaping your life for a little bit. You're experiencing something new that maybe you'll never actually experience. And it's really fulfilling, and it expands your world. It really does.
I love it. Tell us more about the publishing company, which is genius.
Thank you. So Scotia Road Books, it was a really interesting decision. I didn't know that I would do this, but, you know, I had 8 books published by small presses and, you know, independent publishers out there. And, you know, when I was coming up in this industry, you did not ever self-publish. You didn't hybrid publish. You waited for someone to choose you. So you had to query and they had to choose you. And then you like were at their mercy. And today it's a really different publishing industry. There's lots of problems with like the big New York publishers. There are great things too, but you know, it's always what's going to sell. More and more, they don't do much marketing. So the writers not only they'd only get like 10% of whatever the profits are after they make their costs, which may not happen, but they also have to put in their own money for marketing or publicity or whatever. So it's a pretty rough road. More and more publishers are not giving second contracts to their authors. So you have to keep querying again and starting over. So when I wrote Woman of Valor, I thought I was going to just query and find an agent and go the traditional route. And as I started doing it, and I got a lot of interest, I actually got a contract from a publisher, which I turned down because I didn't like the contract, and a bunch of agents loved the book. And, you know, there were all different things. It was great, you know, to hear that feedback. But I thought about, you know, well, what are my goals with this? And I talked to people around the spectrum about who were published traditionally, who self-published, who did hybrid, whatever. And I put all that together. And a friend of mine, Elizabeth Gowing, she's a really good friend. She's a writer in Europe. And she has two books that she had published by traditional UK publishers and four that she put out through her own press that she does with her partner. And she said to me, the question is, what are your goals? Do you want to make a lot of money or sell a lot of books? And I said, well, I think I want both. And
she said, can I have both?
Thank you. You know, like I want it all. She's like, I don't think you can have both. And I'm waiting to see if she's right. But I asked her to explain, and she said her books from the UK publishers, she gets 10%. And so if it sells for £10, she gets £1 each time.
Right.
But they have bigger reach. And so it'll be in stores. It'll be in front of people that she may not be able to get in front of. But when she started her own press and put out her books, she's responsible for all the marketing. She also makes all the money. And she may sell fewer books, but she makes more money in the end.
Yeah.
And so that's what I decided to do.
Interesting.
And then I realized I don't want to just do this for me. I want to do this for other people like me. And so I'm an entrepreneur. I can figure this out. I felt like Woman of Valor would be my guinea pig. So if I messed up, I would just make the mistakes on my book. And then I would know the process for other authors. Mm-hmm. And so I decided that Scotia Road Books would be a hybrid press for women over 40 with strong voices that need to be heard. And that's really important because you're a strong woman. I'm a strong woman. The world is a little afraid of us, which is a shame. But I think a lot of times strong women lose out because the industries don't know what to do with us.
Yes.
And we, especially at midlife, so if it's over 40, you've lived, you've experienced, you have things to say that we all can benefit from. I don't think that should go unheard. And so it feels like a mission, and it's really great. I mean, it's hybrid, but I don't make any money on it. It's not my goal to make money on this. I make money in other ways. It's really my goal to help people have a path toward publication. And we publish contemporary and historical fiction, literary fiction, creative nonfiction, and memoir. And so no poetry at this time, but yeah, it's
I love it.
Yeah.
You have that. You also have the membership, the community, right? That's all online.
Yep.
Is that online?
Yes. Yep.
I need to join that.
So if you go to my website, lynngaladner.com, there's a page Right with Lynn, and the writers community is part of it. And so there's like an application, which basically, if I don't know you and your writing, you'd have to submit some writing, and it's all explained there. It's not expensive, but I do select people so that I know that they're ready for it, because the people in the writers community are serious about their writing and they really want to ramp up what they're doing and eventually get published. And it is an intimate cohort. So you do sign a contract and you have to commit to being there for the time so that everybody doesn't lose out when you're absent. But I teach other things too. Like I do a free write along every month on Zoom, and people come from all over the world. And it's just, you also on the Write with Lynn page, you can sign up and get reminders every month. I do retreats two or three times a year around the world. And I still have a couple spots open in my retreat in October of this year in the Redwoods of Northern California in Humboldt County.
Oh, I was just there.
So,
such a beautiful place to kind of tap into your creativity. Oh my gosh.
Yes. And my retreats are very active. So we write half a day and we hike or we bike or we kayak half a day. So in the Redwoods, it's all hiking, but we'll also be writing in those groves of trees, and it's pretty magical. So there's nothing like being with other writers.
Yeah. I feel like it just opens up a whole new world for you and for others, and it opens up, it creates a whole new life for yourself. Like, little do you know that you're literally writing a new story for yourself, a new life.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, these friendships go deep and they last a really long time, and it's really cool.
This has been such a great chat. I love it.
I know, Wendy, I seriously want to be you when I grow up. I'm going to be like, fangirling all over the place about you. You live the fullest life, and I'm just so grateful that you have me on the show.
We'll have to do a writer's retreat in Madeira.
Let's do it. I'm in. Yes. Let's do it.
Oh my God. Yes. Totally. Cool. Oh my God. You would love it there. Absolutely amazing.
I can't wait. I'm going to go look it up as soon as we're done.
And wait, your website is lynngladner.com, right?
That's the one. Yep. I have a lot of websites, but that's the one to look at. You'll find everything there.
The main one, LynnGlodner, lynngladner.com.
Yes.
Yep. In the show notes too. Thank you so much. Awesome.
Thanks for having me.
Yes. Everyone have a great day and start writing.
Did this podcast inspire you, challenge you, trigger you to make a change, or spit out your coffee laughing? Good. Then there are three ways you can thank me. Number one, you can leave a written review of this podcast on Apple iTunes. Number two, you can take a screenshot of the episode and share it onto social media and tag me, Wendy Valentine. Number three, share it with another midlifer that needs a makeover. You know who I'm talking about. Thank you so much for listening to the show. Get out there and be bold, be free, be you.